Welcome to Balancing Recovery and Family Workshop, WCNA 31. My name is Jean, and I'm an addict. Read any announcements before the meeting? Can we please open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thanks. What's your name? Tim? Tim has been asked to read, what is the Narcotics Anonymous program?
Sammy Attic from Delaware. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We're recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We're not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us, regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We're not interested in what or how much you use or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
We've asked Lorraine to read Why Are We Here?
Aloha, my name's Lorraine, and I'm from Maui, and I'm an addict. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible. Thank you.
At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker. We will have Gary B. from Florida.
My name is Gary. I'm an addict from Hollywood, Florida. Straight up, I know nothing about balance. Nothing. I think it's because I'm a guy. I don't think guys know anything about balance, but because I am married, my wife points out when I'm not in balance. You're laughing because it's so true, so true. I want to tell you a little bit about my family first before I talk about balance and recovery. My mother and father weren't married. This is in the 50s. And I didn't find that out till I was 19. We lived with this little lie. And as soon as I was 19 and found this out, it all made sense why us kids were treated a little different than the other kids, my cousins and stuff. My father left when I was 12. So Basically, I didn't learn nothing about balance from my family. My active addiction, these are the promises. I believe that in Narcotics Anonymous, we have one promise. That's a freedom from active addiction. But active addiction has its own promises. And these are the promises that happened to me. I'm from Salem, Massachusetts, but I've been through most of the United States, running from the disease of addiction. I've been through 11 treatment centers. I have a 3-page chromo record. And I don't have a 3-page chromo record because I'm like this big major thief. It's because I wasn't good at it. I had the stealing part down, but I didn't have the getting away part down. To be good, if you get it both, I was like one of those thieves, you know, in American Idol, where those people get up and they sing, and they really can't sing, but they keep showing them over and over and over again. I was like one of those as a thief. There are videos of me in the police stations, and they just keep showing them over and over, having a good old time at it. So I was bad at it. In 1981, the promises started getting a little worse. What happened is I went into my girlfriend's mother's house, stole the family silver, got caught on it. My girlfriend moved out, and I started sleeping in the streets. And for 7 years, I was a street person. And I stood in soup lines and shelters, and for a little while, I was living in the woods. I was one of those kind of addicts. And so by the time I got clean I came into the fellowship. By the time I got clean, I was 34 years old, and my life had amounted to a little yellow bag. And in that yellow bag, I had a T-shirt. And on my body, I had a pair of sneakers, a pair of jeans, and I had this funky purple shirt on. And I walked into Miami from the west coast of Florida. And that's what my life had amounted to. And I had been using it for over 20 years. Hadn't talked to my family in about a year. Hadn't taken a shower in a long time. Hadn't shaved in a long time. Hadn't held a job in a long, long time. Hadn't been with a woman in a long, long, long time. And I was wanted in the state of Massachusetts. And I was just coming into Miami as one more city of all the other major cities I had been to. And I'm coming in there to try to get clean one more time. And I know the end result. I'm going to go through 28 days of treatment I'm going to use. And I knew that because of all the other treatment centers I had been through. But I went into my treatment center. And I stayed clean for 5 months without not using any drugs for 5 months, without the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Though I had gone to a few meetings, I wasn't in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And this is what I knew about balance. I could work 18 hours a day and not use. And as far as I was concerned, that was balance. All right, I'm not using. I get a job. That's balance. That is balance. I had to learn, like, how to brush my teeth on a regular basis. One of the promises of active addiction, I'm missing 9 of my teeth. That's one of the promises. So just brushing my teeth on a regular basis, that's balance. I got my life together. I'm not using. I got a job, and I'm brushing my teeth, and that's balance. Then I learned that some of that money I was making from working, pay bills. Okay, I'm brushing my teeth. I got a job. I'm taking the money and I'm paying bills. I'm not buying stupid stuff like I was doing. And but I'm working on these ranches 18 hours a day, and I can't leave the ranches. I'm afraid to live my own life. I am petrified. I've been shooting dope for 20 years. I'm not using drugs anymore, and I'm petrified. I'm as afraid as when I was a little kid, and I felt like a little kid. So after 5 months of that, of this kind of clean, where time goes like this, tick, tick. Time is slow, and I'm clean, and in here is hollow, and I'm like, I'm holding on. I made a decision. This is the second best decision I ever made in my life, was to come into the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And so now, I got a job. Oh, I lost that job. Forget it. I didn't have the job. I lost the job. I'm brushing my teeth. I'm taking a shower on a regular basis. I'm going to meetings on a regular basis. I got a sponsor. I got balance in my life. I'm balanced. On December 3rd, 1988, I'm going to meetings. I got about 6 months clean. I'm still homeless. And I'm living on some born-again Christian's couch. But I'm balanced. I'm balanced. I ain't losing no teeth. I'm doing good so far. I go to the H&I graduate dinner in Dade County. And in Dade County, we do these H&I graduate dinners. Like 800 people come to these dinners. gowns and tuxedos, and it's really nice. And I'm dressed in, because I don't have a job and I have no money, I got a pair of sneakers on, a white pair of pants, and a pink shirt. And I go to this thing, and this is what I know for sure. I'm a junkie, I'm going back to using. But I'm going to this thing, and there's two speakers, don't remember a word that they said. And I still don't have a job, I'm still homeless. But I'm coming to Narcotics Anonymous, I got a sponsor, I'm starting to work the steps. And I go to that meeting, there's two speakers, can't remember a word they said. And then at the end of the meeting, we got in this real, real big circle. Back in those days, we used to do the Lord's Prayer. And in the middle of the Lord's Prayer, something happened to me. Something glorious happened to me. I looked around that room, and I knew that I never, ever had to use again. And I was standing there, and one arm on one guy and one arm on the other guy. And I felt something come in my body. My whole life I had been hollow. I just had this hollowness about me. And I felt something come inside me and fill me. And what that was hope. And hope is the only spiritual principle you can give to another person. You can't give anybody honesty. You can't give them courage. You can't give them integrity. You can't give anybody any other spiritual principle, but you can give another person hope. And I felt that hope. And hope is real as this room, as real as this island. And I got hope. And I looked around that room, and I knew I never had to use it again. I also knew that maybe, just maybe, I could hold a job. That just maybe I didn't have to lose the rest of my teeth. That maybe someday I could fall in love and somebody could love me. That maybe I didn't have to feel the way I've been feeling my whole life. And shortly after that, and this is where I believe the balance started coming in my life, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I let Him take care of my life. I didn't have to worry about the balance. And just before that, like a month before that, I went to a Thanksgiving dinner. And there was a speaker there, and then they had a dance. And so I'm sitting on a table sort of like this, and there's a girl standing in front of me, another girl, and they're talking recovery. And the thought comes into my mind, I'm going to ask this girl to dance. But I'm a coward. But I learned about God. So I'm going to talk to God. So I said, God, please give me the courage to ask this girl to dance. Then I counted to 10. And then I counted to 10 again. I spent 20 minutes counting to 10. And then I went up to this girl and I said, hey, would you like to dance? And she said no. And I'm sort of glad she said no, because I dance like a white guy from Wisconsin. I've never been to Wisconsin, but that's how I dance. She said no. So I go back and sit on the table. And I go, God, that was funny. And then I said, if you really exist, please put that woman in my life. 9 months later, we're married. This month, September, it's either the 24th or 27th. 24th. Her birthday is the 27th, that means. She also keeps the dates in line, keeps me in balance. We'll be married 16 years. Let me tell you something about our relationship. In those 16 years or 17 years that we've been together, we've only had 2 arguments. My wife thinks we've had more. But I only count the ones I was involved in. So. When I was using, this is what my mother did. For months or years at a time, I would disappear. My mother sat looking out the third floor window. I grew up in the Puerto Rican slums. My mother would look out the window with the police scanner by her side and just sit there and listen. For years and years. That's the type of addict I was. And every once in a while, she'd send my brother out to look for me. And every once in a while, I'd be like down at the homeless shelter or sitting in the Boston Combat Zone or somewhere bad, and my brother would just happen to come by, and I just thought he happened to come by. And when I heard in recovery that he found me maybe 1 out of 100 times that he looked for me. That's what I did to my family. So in recovery, I had to do something different. And I'll talk a little bit about my mother. She knew all the bad stuff about me, that I was wanted and all that stuff. And I was, cops would come to the house looking for me. But in recovery, I would call her up on a regular basis and tell her stuff that's happened in my life, because she lived 1,500 miles away from me. And I just call like once a week. I said, yeah, this happened, and me and Debbie are going here, and I've been asked to speak here. And I would just tell her stuff about my life and try to amend the way that I used to be, to show that I'm not who I used to be. And so I hook up with Debbie, and so now the balance, right? I have said, it's not just me, because it's, at first it was just all about me. And one time Debbie says, Gary, let's go to a meditation. She's my girlfriend, so I said, okay. If she was my wife at the time, I would have thought about it. But as a girlfriend, you do things for your girlfriend that you probably won't do for your wife. And so I said, yeah, okay. And so it's May. I got a year clean. I haven't talked to my family yet because I'm a coward. And for all these years, I'd go through these treatment centers and tell my mother, Mom, I'm going to do all right. And I'd last a day or two. And so this time I waited till I was well enough to tell her. And, well, I was afraid. That's why. And so I go to this meditation with my wife and her mother. And there's seats about this many seats. And every other seat, there are tissues. And I'm looking at it, and I'm goofing with my wife, going, hum, you know, and I'm expecting some lady with purple hair to come out, and, you know. And so this lady comes out, and I'd never meditated before. You know, I have a year clean, so I'm not into meditation, but I'm doing it because my girlfriend asked me to. So this lady comes up, stands in front, and I remember counting the seats. And it was like 75 seats, and I'm thinking, $30 a whack, this lady's making some money. And that's the kind of thinking I had. And so this lady gets up front, and she goes, what we're going to do today, it's May, and it's next week is Mother's Day, we're going to have a healing between you and your mother. Get me the F out of here. It ain't happening. I cannot do this one. No. And every other seat, there was a stack of tissues. And I found out what the tissues were for. They were for me. I do this meditation, this whole meditation, I'm talking to God. God, help me through this, help me through this. And there's this healing going on. And she put me in this deep, deep trance that I had this amazing healing between me and my mother. And then after that, she goes, all right, go to the person next to you and pretend like you're the mother, you're the son, or whatever. So I turn to this lady next to me. She's got the same name as my mother. She's the same age as my mother. She's got a son named Gary. Same age. We had all these similarities. Me and her have this healing. And it gave me the courage, because I compromised, because I really didn't want to go to the meditation, but now I'm involved with somebody, and balance is all about compromise. I compromised just a little bit to go and do something that Debbie wanted to do. And I get so much out of it. Debbie got nothing out of it. Her mother got nothing out of it. That meditation was for me, you know. And I had this healing with my mother. I got enough courage because of that to send my mother some Mother's Day flowers. My mother didn't think they were from me. She thought that my brother had sent them, because I had never sent my mother Mother's Day flowers. But every year after that, I sent my mother Mother's Day flowers. Because I'm in recovery, and it's about family. It's about doing this. And, of course, like every other addict, I come in here, and I found out that work is good. I actually held a job, and I learned how to hold a job in recovery. And you can take money, and you can buy stuff with it, you know, that you haven't stolen. And it feels good to have your own money that you earned. And so I got a little out of whack on working. So I wasn't balanced there. And then service, serving people, that feels good. That feels really good. So in Narcotics Anonymous, I became, even though I've always been about the steps, I started serving a lot, you know. And I got involved with H&I, and not just one meeting, but two meetings. And I'm bringing meetings into a homeless shelter, not just one day, but 3 days. And I'm in Miami, and there's a ton of homeless people. So we started a meeting underneath the homeless bridges. So I got like 5 days of going down to the homeless shelters and the H&I. And one day, Debbie comes to me with a calendar. And on every day, she wrote what I was doing. And at the end, there was 20 minutes on a Sunday for her. She goes, I get 20 minutes on a Sunday. That's all I get is 20 minutes on a Sunday. And then she goes, there's a war in Somalia. Maybe they need you there. And I said to her, do you think there are any addicts there? So I'm learning it. Like I said, I don't know nothing about balance. I'm just learning. And my wife's pointing out where I'm out of whack. And I sat her down and I told her where I was from. She knew my story, but she didn't know where I was from. And I sat down and I told her, people like me don't make it out alive. I told her about all my friends that had died, and that God's nonsense had shown me this way, that I had to get back. I had no choice in the matter, and she understood. And she started coming. She compromised. She'd go to the homeless meetings with me. And the outside meeting, we'd have like big rats running by underneath our feet and big roaches and stuff and the smell of urine. And she's like an office person, you know. And she'd come down there and lift her feet off the ground. She'd come to the homeless meetings. And she'd go to the shelters with me. And she started doing things with me. She compromised. And balance is all about compromise. And she started doing the things that I was doing. And she was known in Miami. She'd be walking from one office to a meeting or something, right? And the homeless people would be saying, hey, Gary's wife. You know, with their missing teeth and their little bag. And their, and so she was known as Gary's wife by all the homeless people. and so time went on, and I'm struggling with balance, and I'm learning about it, and I'm overcompensating. I'm like working 60 hours, and I'm serving all this, and I'm overcompensating for all the stuff that I didn't do when I was using, and all the bad stuff. So I'm overcompensating, and so sooner or later it had to start working itself out, and it's a learning process. When we have 7 years clean, I'm up in Georgia doing service because I'm involved with doing other things other than Narcotics Anonymous. It's about, because of the ninth step, I'm involved with Habitat for Humanity. So I'm up in Georgia and I'm doing Habitat for Humanity as part of my ninth step. And I get a call from Demi. She tells me that she found a lump in one of her breasts. And I'm up on this roof and I'm thinking, I'm talking to God. I said, God, you know, Debbie's into God and service, and I'm into, everything's going to be all right. So I come down to Miami, and Debbie has a biopsy. Now I know, because I'm into God, and Debbie's into God, and I'm into service, Debbie's into service, that everything's going to be all right. They found something in her breast. They found cancer in one of her breasts. And so the surgery's set for about a month away. But I know that I'm about God, Debbie's about God, that everything's going to be all right. And she's going in for a surgery, and I'm thinking that they're going to go cut her open. They're not going to find anything, and everything's going to be all right. A couple hours later, the doctor comes out, and he's covered with Debbie's blood. Now, he said they had to remove one of my wife's breasts. He said that everything was okay. And I reached up to this higher power, and if I get any balance in my life, it's because of God. You know, if I follow God's will, that's where I get the balance. And I reached up to this higher power, and I just said, God, give us the strength to go through this. That's all I said. Give us the strength. And where we got the strength, because some of the people, Danny was there, there's a couple of people that were there when it happened, was the people from Narcotics Anonymous. You guys came to our house, and you made the bed, and you bought us food, and you brought Debbie to meetings, and you brought meetings to the house, and you helped us through that. That's where we got the strength. And, you know, I'm this street person, junkie, and I'm a carpenter by trade, and I'm kind of like this, you know, a little rough around the edges. And when I picked Debbie up at the hospital, and this is where God comes in, when I picked Debbie up at the hospital, I brought her a dozen flowers, and I put a CD in the tape player, Bryan Adams, Have You Ever Loved a Woman? And I gave her the flowers, and I sat her down. I put this CD in the tape player, in the CD player, and I sang along with Bryan Adams, Have You Ever Loved a Woman? I can't dance. I can't sing. That's why I'm a carpenter. And I sang along, and I could tell you that wasn't me. That didn't come from me. That came from a place higher than me. And when Debbie saw her body for the very first time, and no words can console her, and I picked her up and I put her in the bathtub and I washed the tears away and I washed the parts of her body she didn't want me to see. That didn't come from me. That came from someplace higher. And when Debbie's hair was falling out, and We had to shave our head, and we're in the bathroom, and I'm shaving our head, and tears are rolling down her eyes, and tears are rolling down my eyes. I said, honey, you know, the family that shaves together stays together. That was me. God takes no claim on that one. And so that year, people from NA came and surrounded us, and I sort of cut back on the stuff that I was doing to take care of her. But a year went by, and she had a surgery, and she got, you know, she was feeling better, and the chemo was almost all done with, and her hair started growing back. I went back to doing what I was doing, working 60 hours a week, and serving, and H&I chair, and H&I meetings, and doing the exact same stuff that I was doing. I come home on a Thursday evening, there's a letter. It says, Gary, I don't want to live like this anymore. I want more out of our lives. And I didn't call her for about a couple of days. You know, I thought about what I had to do. And on Sunday morning, I went to my H&I committee, and I said, I'm the H&I chair, and I need to step down. I'm not going to explain why, but I just need to step down. And I stepped down from some of this, all that ton of stuff that I was doing. I kept my H&I meeting, I kept some of the stuff, but there was something more important in my life. That was my wife, my family. And so I needed to make some changes. And after I did that, I called her and I told her the changes I had made, because our relationship was that important. Then we started getting involved. We started doing stuff together. We started doing an H&I meeting together on Friday nights. We did for years in a detox. So a lot of our recovery started melding together after that. And we started enjoying life far, far, far more. And because of Debbie's cancer and her work in the steps and her courage and stuff, we've learned in this fellowship that even the bad stuff that we go through, it's all learned experience, but you can take what we learn. Just like I'm the street person, can't keep teeth in his own face, and I've become the person I am today. With her cancer, she went through this exact same thing. And she had little dreams about being a writer, and she ends up starting writing. And the very first story she ever wrote was published in one of the Chicken Soup books. And So she kept on writing, and she ended up writing a book, and we go on book tour for years, and I go to these book things, and I was known as Debbie's husband. See how it all turned around? I'm Debbie's husband. Homeless people know her as Gary's wife, and these scholarly people know me as Debbie's husband. But we've been on this journey. It's all a journey. Like people have been saying in these workshops, it's all a journey, all a journey. And my mother ended up passing away. But when she passed away, I buried her with my 9-year medallion, and she knew who I was. You know, she got to know who I was. My brother got to know who I am. My sister knows who I am. Some of them might need this program. You know, it's up to them. But they know who I am, and they know what I'm doing with my life. And this balance thing, for me, it's been a struggle. You know, it's just there's so much to do, and there's just so, and then you got to sort all these things out, and what's more important. But through this fellowship, I got the best life I've ever had. I'm in Hawaii. All right, hold on, wait, no. I'm staying for 18 days. No. But I'm learning how to enjoy life, and I serve a ton, but I'm also learning how to enjoy my life. Thanks for letting me share. And here's my wife, Debbie.
Okay, you know how emotional you feel right now? I want to start by thanking my name's Debbie and I'm an addict, yeah. Hello, that's the right way, thank you. Yeah, Gary's wife, a.k.a. Gary's wife, right? I want to thank the committee, though, of the World Committee of Narcotics Anonymous. I can't tell you what an honor this is. This is so amazing. You know, I remember when we went to the World Convention in 1989 in Florida. That's when Gary asked me to marry him, by the way. and we went to a workshop, and I remember looking at the person going, man, someday I wish I had the courage to do that. But I never knew if I ever would. We actually, years ago, spoke somewhere, and they asked me to speak with him, and I said, I'll go first, because then I can walk off in 10 minutes, because I was just petrified, and I froze and walked off, so he just took over. Thank God he can talk a lot. Up here. Somebody knows. It took him 2 years. We were married 2 years before he could look me in the eye. There's a lot that goes with addiction. You know, what I know about active addiction is there was absolutely no balance in my life either. I wanted more, and I would go and just stay for days in the dope house. You know, I didn't know anything about getting a little and doing a little, you know. I use with my mom. I hope she didn't listen to this tape, but she could buy a gram of Coke and a week later have some left. What's that about? So anyways, you know, when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I got here because my bottom was not like Gary's. You know, as the woman shared earlier today, I still had a job, I still had a car, I had an apartment. But I've been doing it for 18 years, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I felt so old, so washed up, burnt out, dead, empty inside. I couldn't do it another day. And so I, whether I believed I was an addict or not, I knew I had a drug problem, but I couldn't quite, that's an addict. you know, people like that, that's an addict. I didn't think I was, you know, I really thought I was becoming an addict. And I wasn't quite there yet, but I was desperate enough where when I came to the meetings, I listened, I tried to identify. And by the time I had 6 months, actually with that same Thanksgiving dance that he was talking about, I was with my family who all drank some parties. And I knew by then I'd been about clean about 5 months. And I knew, like, if I'm going to be around insanity like that, I need to go to a meeting before or after or, you know, like both, before and after. So I went to Thanksgiving dinner with my mom and my brother, and they're all lit, my grandmother. And then, you know, after a couple hours, I told my mom, I said, you know, I'm heading out. There's an NA function I'm going to go to. She got so upset with me. You're always going to those damn meetings, you know? You know, and she's like, why are you doing that? You're as gone now as you were then, you know? And then she said to me, you know, you exaggerate a little. It just wasn't that bad. And, you know, she forgot that a year earlier, because I was only 5 months clean, a year earlier at Thanksgiving, she had begged me not to use on Thanksgiving. She was going to be cooking all day. She didn't want me spending the whole day in the bathroom, not eating the dinner that she cooked. She forgot. She begged me not to use on Thanksgiving just a year earlier. You know, they forget. They get us back, and we seem well, and they forget that we got to keep doing something to stay that way. And my mom forgot. She said it just wasn't that bad. And, you know, she's lit, so I know you can't really talk a lot of sense to someone like that. But you know, I just did what I could, and I went over to my mom on the couch because she was starting to cry, and I just said, you know, Mama, I love you. They're not going to replace you, because I think that's what she was afraid of. I had this new way of life and all these new friends. I said, they're not going to replace you. I love you. But you've got to trust that it was that bad on the inside. You know, I couldn't do it anymore, and this is all that I know that's working. You have to let me go just a little and let me grow up. She's never questioned my meeting since then. Somehow I conveyed it to her what I needed to do for me. Because I looked okay on the outside sometimes, you know, so sometimes she would forget. And then, God, I went to that dance and I met him, you know. So that, even though I said no, I was trying. That's something I don't get about NA. And there's some contradictions here in case you haven't noticed. Dances all the time, but no relationships? I mean, how do you do it? I don't know. My first dance, I couldn't go in because all I knew is if I went in, I would dance with someone. If I liked him enough to dance with him, I'd kiss him. If I liked him enough to kiss him, I'd sleep with him, and then we're in a relationship. So I couldn't even go into the dance. So this was, I think, maybe my first dance, and I was trying not to be in a relationship, which is exactly why I said no to him. You know, I was afraid. I wanted my recovery to come first, and I'd been a bit promiscuous. a bit. I minimize a little. So I've been a little promiscuous in my active addiction, and I was really, really afraid that I was going to sleep my way through Narcotics Anonymous, and I didn't want to do that. So I was just trying real hard not to. You know, but we ended up, we did end up getting together and getting into recovery. And, you know, one thing we did right off, and I don't know how, I guess because it's such a strong warning not to be in a relationship, that what I did when we did go together, because we had 6 and 7 months clean when we started dating, is I would not change my meetings for him. He didn't change his commitments for me. We went to our own meetings and saw each other afterwards. He started coming to one of mine, my home group. I'm not sure I like that. it was mine. you know, because then I couldn't share. So, but we ended up early on coming to an agreement about something, since we do go to some meetings together and some separate, is that either of us could share whatever we needed to as long as it was the truth. And there was a time when we were clean 2 years together, married 2 years, clean 2 years, I forget, somewhere around there. No, less than that. I don't remember. Somewhere in the early years. I think we hadn't even married a year yet. And his niece came to live with us, and we were trying to help this 15, 16-year-old get her life together. We thought we had so much to offer. And we didn't. We were still pretty new, and we didn't have a lot to offer. And it ended up, we ended up fighting a lot over it, and it ended up, like, pulling us apart. And I was trying to control the uncontrollable, and I finally put my foot down and said, she's got to go. But I was in such fear myself, because he was, like he was sharing earlier, trying to make up for the uncle he never was. So he was letting her do whatever she wanted, because he couldn't say no. And I couldn't live with the insanity, so she ended up leaving. But we went through a period of not talking for quite a few weeks. I was at 2 years clean. Now I know I had 2 years clean. I was steaming open his mail that would come from her because I was afraid of what she was going to say about me. when he wanted to go to a meeting, I was like, you can't leave. You can't go anywhere without me. And I would go get in the truck, and then we'd have a fight, and I'd get out, and then I'd chase it down the street. I was a raving lunatic at 2 years clean because I was in such fear that this relationship that we got into early and people said we shouldn't be in, it was going to fail, and they'd all say, I told you so. And I'd be too embarrassed to, like, admit that I was wrong and didn't know what I was doing. So, you know, I was, like, a total mess, and I finally knew it by the second time I steamed his letter open. Because he said, get your hands off my mail, you know, stop it. And I couldn't. But the first time I ripped it open, the second time I steamed it and sealed it, then I told my sponsor, and she said, well, you got to get honest. And I thought, well, if I have to tell him I opened it and sealed it, now I have to unseal it so that and rip it so he'll know I was in it. And then I have to tell him I did all of that. It was freaking nuts. It was very embarrassing. I came home and I told him the truth. My sponsor said, just don't do it again. But I knew I had to get honest about what I'd done. So I told him the truth about what I'd done. And he just looked at me and he said, I don't know who you are. You are not the woman I married. If I ever had you on a pedestal, I don't know. And I was thinking, how can you come back from that? You know, if the person you're in love with, married to, feels that way about you, you might stay married, but they will never love or respect you for real ever again. It's never coming back. And it was devastating to me. And so my sponsor told me what I needed to do was go to my home group, a women's group, and tell the truth. And I was real good up to 2 years telling you what I'd been through, what I did to get through it, and where I'm at now. I never told you when I was in it. I waited till I had the solution and told you after. I wasn't about to tell you when it felt bad that what was going on right then. So what I did was, she suggested I do that for to stay clean. I went to that meeting and I said, you know, I'm wishing this 15-year-old dead because I think she ruined my marriage. And right now I'm just telling God I want her dead and I'm not taking it back. That's how I feel. And man, that's a black heart. That is just cold, you know. And I don't want to be that person. It would cause me such pain to feel that way about another person. But all I could see is it was her. She did this to us, you know. And I really tried to do a lot of things to get into forgiveness, to heal our family. What I ended up doing was, first I ripped and burned a picture trying to let go of my resentment. So I ripped a picture, but it was his picture of her. He didn't like that. and I went running. I mean, I'd share, I'd journal. I didn't know what to do to get this rage out of me. And so I just started pounding the pavement because I didn't know what else to do with the anger. And while I was running, it took weeks. Like I said, it was about 3-4 months altogether where we were sleeping in separate bedrooms and not talking. And this was towards the end of that period.
And while running, I just realized, have I never done wrong? This is just a little girl and a plea for love. No one in her family wanted her up north. And we were willing, and it just didn't work out. But all she was doing was trying to get love. Who am I to hold that against her? And have I never done wrong? Will I never do wrong again? I couldn't hold it against her anymore. And I had to forgive her. And I just said, you know, she didn't send us the money, fine. If she didn't do this, fine. Whatever, however you want to handle it, I trust you're going to handle it okay. I'm stepping out of the way, and I'm letting go and letting go out of here. I'm out of the way, you know. And, you know, what he said to me was, you know, I'm some hell of a camping trip, you know, because a camping trip, someone's going to get poison ivy, someone's going to break their leg, it's going to suck while you're going through it, but then you're going to bond through the I'm not supposed to curse. I'm sorry. You're going to bond through the bad stuff that's happening, and if someday there'll be perspective and you can laugh about it. And that's what happened for us. We went through this horrible period of our marriage, but because I made a commitment when I went to that women's meeting, I'm not running home to mom, because the first marriage that I was in, that's all I did. Anytime there's trouble, I ran home to mom, cried on her shoulder about it. I said, I'm not running home to mom. I am not using behind this. I'm not going to take my life, and I'm not going to cheat, because that's the other thing I always do is go find another guy. So I just made those four things. I'll do anything else, but I'm not doing that. I'm going to try to do something different this time. And as a result, I learned how to work through conflict in a relationship, you know, instead of run or fix. I never knew how to do that. But because we went through something really tough really early, we learned to go through it. His MO was when things got tough, he always split town and just left the girl. So he stayed. That was his only thing. I'm just staying in town. It's bad. I don't like her, but I'm staying in town. So it wasn't pretty in the beginning. And I think that's partly because we were so new. You know, I'm not going to lie to you. I think that that's why it was a little rough for us. But because we were committed to the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, to going to meetings, to the basics of not picking up, going through the process, we ended up staying clean through it. We ended up staying married and getting to a place of, we have such a joyful marriage, you know. And like he shared, he stole all the stories I was going to tell you, by the way. This is all new shit. Because I showed him my list. He stole it. Okay, you're just going to have to bleep that out. I'm sorry. So anyway, you know, one of the things that happened when we have around the same clean time, when we had around 5 years clean, is when he made the decision that he needed to turn himself in and face that up north. And it was some big, heavy financial amends, and there was ended up being like 25 outstanding warrants for his arrest. And I'm like not from where he's from necessarily, so I'm like, is that bad? is 25 bad? Does that mean time? What's that mean? And he goes, yeah, I think I'm going away. I'm just not sure how long. I'm like, how long do you think? Because at that time, I had 5 years clean, but I'm thinking I could be safe for, I think, 2 years. After that, we're pushing it, so you better not get sentenced for more than 2 years. Anyways, we went up there, and, you know, because we were both willing, not initially, because Gary and I are real different. Oh, I wanted to tell you this joke, and I'm going to mess it up. I'm so bad at jokes. But I never had balance. I'm like a little cokehead, real hyper. He's like this laid-back junkie. The way that I got balance was to marry into it. A junkie and a cokehead together recovering, now that's balance, right? Did I do okay? I know, leave the joke telling to him. So anyways, he gets immediately from, there's a problem, the answer is acceptance, and he's like, boom, acceptance, totally cool with everything all the time, whatever it is. And I have this whole process of working all 12 steps on everything that I go through. It can be tedious. But anyway, so when he first was facing all this, I wanted to be the supportive wife, but part of me is like, we just bought a house. I got a nice car. He's got a nice truck. He's got a little business. I can't run the business. I can't pay this mortgage by myself. If he goes away, we're going to have to, like, sell some stuff, the house maybe. I might have to take someone in to live with me, help pay the mortgage, you know. And I got just a little resentment. Like, I got enough of my own amends. Now I got to pay consequences behind his amends, you know. And that's not spiritual. At least I know that. Okay, I'm just telling you my process. I realized, like, when I met him, he had this little tiny efficiency and a little 5-foot couch that he had to put either his head or his feet over the edge of. And he had little velvet paintings on the wall, and he had this rusted out, beat up old Ford truck that was, it was one of those ba-boom, ba-boom. And you could see the road through the floorboard. Bad. But it was his first vehicle. You know, he was proud of it. And I had this fancy little white convertible that I was a little proud of, but I'd ding up all the time. So I realized, like, I'm with a man who's got integrity and character, and these are things that are truly important and valuable. And I thought, you know, if we have to lose it all, give it all away, sell it so that we can take care of this amends, I would rather do that and go live in a little efficiency and take a bus to work and be with a man who I respect than have all that stuff that really doesn't mean anything if you don't have the other, you know? So once I realized that, I was like, God, you know, just let me show up and do the right thing here. And, you know, like I say, that a lot of times I have to go to an extreme to get back to balance. You know, we did that. I surrendered, went through all my stuff, and obviously it turned out okay. We're both here today, and we still have the same little house. That worked out. And I think if you're in God's will, things do work out. Not always like you plan. Like when I got the cancer, you know, I was terrified that I was going to die because it had spread. The prognosis was not great. I was fairly young when it happened. For the first five nights after diagnosis, I didn't sleep at all. My mind was just like when I was new. How many people are coming to the funeral? Will he remember Gardenias? You know, who's singing Amazing Grace? I want everybody weeping. You know, will they miss me? Will they remember me? You know, but I was really like going through a lot, and I couldn't sleep. And after 5 nights of that, I told my mom. I said, you know, I got to call a doctor and get a script because I cannot handle it anymore. And she said, what about your recovery? And I said, hello, I have cancer. Did you not hear? What part of that did you miss? And she just walked out of the room. And next thing you know, my sponsor's on the phone. After my relapse, I had written a letter to my mom. It's dated 6/20/1988. My clean date is 6/18. So I had 2 days clean when I wrote it. But what I wrote was, because I'd relapsed on alcohol with my mom and it took me right back to the dealer's house. I believed I was different. Obviously, I'm not. So what I wrote to my mom was, if I ever tell you I can drink, I'm lying. If I ever tell you I'm not an addict, I'm lying. If I ever tell you I don't need meetings, I'm lying. Basically, I'm a liar. You need to know that about me. And I need this program, and you just have to trust that, you know. And I wrote like a 1-page little letter to her, ratting on myself when I had enough clarity to do that. Don't remember ever writing that letter. I only know when I wrote it because it's dated, and I date most things. She saved that letter for 7 years. I never knew I wrote it. She never mentioned it. She saved it for 7 years. And when I told her that I thought I needed medication, that it wasn't like I wanted to get higher party, I thought it was medically necessary, she knew what to do because I had told her what to do in that letter. She called my sponsor. And my sponsor got on the phone with me and said, what's this shit you want to use? I said, I don't want to use. It's medically necessary. Because that's the way that I use, mostly to party. But when my dad died a year before I got clean, I used to cope. I used to cope. You know, and I think a lot of times when we get some clean time in recovery, it comes at us sideways, not head on, let's go out and get loaded. It's sneaky, you know. And it can come through the back door like mine was right then, you know. And my sponsor said, I tell you what, before you call a doctor and get a script, why don't you call my sponsor? It turns out my sponsor's sponsor was diagnosed with the same cancer that I had. Everything I was facing, she'd been through 9 years earlier when she had 6 years clean. She goes, that's how we do it. We find someone who's been through it with us. And they help us through it, you know. That's what we do here. And she said, so that's what you do. And that's what I did. I called my grand sponsor, and she helped me through that whole thing. And like Gary said, the fellowship came up around us, carried us through the whole thing. And, you know, it was a life struggle for a while. One of the things I learned on that struggle was, I don't know what caused it. You know, I can't sit up here and tell you this is what caused my cancer. I have no idea. You know, luck of the draw, just like addiction. I have no idea. Got some theories. But one of the things I think may have contributed is, like Gary,
you know, I'm an addict. If something feels good, I want more of it. So Narcotics Anonymous, working the steps, helping others, began to feel really good to me. And I jumped in, and I'm like a little addict to recovery, you know. And, you know, just a step junkie. Not quite the serviceaholic as him. I was much more into sponsorship and steps. Not that he didn't do steps. make sure that's clear. But, you know, I just was like this little, sometimes he calls me like the Ever Ready Bunny. Going and going and going. And, you know, so I was, like, living life at kind of this high-revved pace, even in recovery. And I think I wasn't spending enough time, like, for self-care, that part of balance, you know. Because I think the way I work the steps and the way I understand them is they are about healing with God, self, and others. And when it comes to self, it's mental, physical, and spiritual. And I was doing a whole lot to help you live the best life you could, but I didn't always have time for me. You know, and that was, I feel like I was such a piece of dirt when I was out there. My behavior hurt so many people that when I came here to have a way to make up for it, to help others be better and to contribute, to have that sense of contribution and purpose, meant so much to me when I got here. It was like, what I've been looking for all my life. Now I don't have to feel so bad about myself. And that's true. But at the same time, I overdid it. You know, I overdid it. So what happened for me was I think I just kind of burned out. My immune system got a little weak, you know, and I think that contributed, like I said. So after about, I think about a year after the cancer, when I'd been through all that, I made a decision. It was a tough one, but I made a decision to let go of all my sponsees, and that I didn't want to speak anywhere. I didn't want to have any service positions. I didn't want to sponsor anybody, and I didn't know for how long. My sponsor and I discussed it. We decided 3 months. A 90-day period, and then we'd reassess it then. And I couldn't even fathom. Someone suggested I do it because they heard me talk about my life. It's like, you need to, like, stop taking care of others and take care of yourself, or there ain't going to be a you to take care of them, you know. And so I listened, and I did it, and it was really tough. And then as soon as the 3 months was up, I thought, oh, I'm going to have 3 months of complete peace and solitude and quiet. Me and God are going to get tight, you know. And what happened was sitting still. I mean, I still went to meetings. I never, ever stopped meetings. But what happened, sitting still in my own skin while keeping busy, a lot of feelings kicked up. And I cried a lot. And I didn't like that. And I had to grieve not being able to have children. That was one of the fallouts of the cancer. And I had to feel that because I was still enough to feel it. And I didn't like that. And I wanted so bad to start sponsoring again and get out of myself. And so after 3 months, okay, it's 3 months. Can I? And my sponsor said, what'd you learn? Well, I need a sponsor. I gotta say, it's who I am. It's what I do. It's my thing, you know. And she goes, nope, you're not ready. 3 more months. So at the end of 6 months, I said, I'm ready. Now I'm ready. And people are asking. They're waiting. I gotta do it. And she's like, nah, tell me more. And it's like, what happened, what I said to her then is, I need to do it. What happened was, I didn't feel worthy of not just my seat here in NA, but my seat here on this earth, if I wasn't doing something positive to make up for who I was. I wasn't worthy. And I felt very guilty not serving, very guilty. And she just said, you're not ready, because it was a self-worth thing. She says, you need to get that God loves you no matter what you do. You cannot earn God's love. It's a gift. Okay. Got 5 minutes, I'm going to wind it up. So, I did 9 months of time. I did my time. And at the end, though, something in me shifted. And I went back to my sponsor and I said, you know, a couple women have asked me if you think. She goes, well, so you, what do you think? And I go, well, if you think I'm ready, I'm ready. She goes, you're ready. Because I didn't need to do it. It could be where I give a gift, you know, instead of need to do it, because I need to be needed. So she said, I think you're ready. You know, and I sponsor completely differently. As one of my sponsors here knows, I don't go telling people what to do. Sometimes I ask them, what do you think you should do? Guide them, empower them to find their own answers. And so they don't need me. So I think, you know, I got it that I'm here for the duration. I'm not just here for a little while. If I'm here for the long run, then I can be balanced in the way that I recover. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. It can be, I don't have to save everyone, sponsor everyone. I can sponsor a reasonable amount of people and trust the others will get taken care of, you know. I'm not the only one. There's some humility in that. I'm not the one, you know. So now I practice balance in that. And, you know, some of the things that I learned when I was sick was to nurture my soul, I need to be near nature. I got to be near the ocean. That's my thing. Some people, it's the mountains, sometimes the park. For me, I live near the ocean. I wasn't finding time for it. And I wasn't finding time for passion, for joy, for music. I listen to recovery tapes. I'm not bashing NA. I still go to 5 meetings a week. I sponsor 8 women. I love recovery. But I needed to find some balance. I needed to know that I could go to a rock concert again. Clean, you know. We bought a Harley. Yay! It's the one time where I totally let go of control. I'm a passenger. It's so cool. but, you know, I just found that, you know, because what I said to him in that letter that I wrote him when I left him was, I love you enough that if you believe your third step is that you need to serve and work like this, then you need to love me enough to let me go. I thought when we got married we could have it all. I thought we could serve, we could work and be productive, we could have a joyful marriage. I thought we could do it all. If you don't think so, I can't just work and serve anymore. There's got to be some joy, some fun, some richness, some play. It's got to be for me, you know. And so I just asked him, could you imagine leaving someone you love that's a healthy relationship? It's one thing to leave something bad. That's tough. But it's to leave someone you absolutely adore, you know. But we've become much, much healthier, much more balanced as a result. You know, we do. He says, I call him up on it. He tells me what my balance, what I learned from him. He knows how to kick back and lay down on a Sunday and watch the game. Stop. He knows how to stop with 10 loads of laundry sitting there. You know, and so he's teaching me how to, like, relax. I think we really do balance each other really well. And if you can do that with your partner, find their strong suits and look at them that way, and maybe they'll see yours. And that's kind of what we've been doing, you know. And it's I'm really glad I got to share on balance and family and recovery. You know, my mom is so grateful for this program, for the daughter that you've given her back, and everyone in my family is. And I just thank you. I love Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you all very much.
Let's thank Debbie and Gary for speaking, and we've asked Andrew to come up and read just for the day.
Hi, family. I'm an addict named Andrea. Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Let's make a circle and close the meeting using the third step prayer, please.